Good morning, Prince George. This is Uncle Don with Uncle Don Reads the Comics for the 4th of December 2002. Today's my 24th session of ranting over CFUR Radio 88.7 FM. I want to give you all fair warning that I may be discontinuing my shows on short notice. As soon as my GST rebate check comes in for the Uncle Don Limited Corporation, I expect that my wife and I may be off to Brazil for an extended holiday, at least until the statute of limitations runs out. If the feds issue the check for $7 million, I will try to send a CD of my show to CFUR every week. That is, if recording the shows does not interfere with my luxurious new lifestyle in Rio de Janeiro. Before getting on with this week's business of criticizing the world and its cargo of fools, I want to ask everyone to give pause and to thank the all-merciful God, or gods according to your preference, for our friends, the Americans. Those of you who are driving should pull your SUVs off the road and come to a complete stop before we proceed. Now, kneel, pay attention to me, and stop looking for lint on the carpet. We give thanks to thee for the Americans and their nuclear umbrella, which they have so selflessly extended to protect us from rogue nuclear missiles. We give thanks for their leader, George Bush, who is not a moron, but a friend of our Prime Minister. We give thanks for their evangelical preachers, who come to our frozen land to give us moral guidance in the great issues of the day, like abortion and marijuana. We give thanks for the American corporations, who have come to aid our economy in integrating itself into the global system of greed. We give thanks for those corporations which are relieving us of the burden of excess oil, gas, and natural resources to provide jobs for us all. Okay, fun's over. Resume your previous activities. Ignore those stares from the unwashed and the ungrateful. If not for the constant help of the Americans, we would be forced to run our own society and economy. We would have to run our own factories and retail our own merchandise. We would have to develop our own social programs. We would have to maintain a huge military machine at great expense to protect us from, the list seems to have been buried here somewhere. Well, never mind. We know that the world is full of enemies of Canada who, if not for the Americans, would invade our fair land and tell us what our moral standards should be, take over our businesses and resources, and leave us as hewers of wood and drawers of water for their foreign needs. God bless America. I wonder if you know what I'm talking about on this show. The National Geographic Society in the States has done a survey of the geographic knowledge of 18 to 24-year-olds in 9 countries. The results are disappointing for North Americans. It looks like NAFTA has done nothing for education. Of the 9 countries surveyed, 2 rank lower than Canada, the United States, and Mexico. More young Americans could identify the island setting of Survivor than could find Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, and Israel. Our Prime Minister has announced that our government will participate in the coming criminal invasion of Iraq, yet just 1 young Canadian in 10 surveyed could find Iraq on a map. I guess that complicates the problem of getting the troops there. If our pilots are as ignorant as our youth, they may land in Australia to fight rogue kangaroos. Only 17% of Canadians could name just 4 countries that officially acknowledge having nuclear weapons. I suspect that those who are the most vocal about what weapons the Iraqis might have are the ones with the least knowledge of what others do have. When a similar survey was done in 1988, the American youth came in dead last. This prompted the Geographic Society to spend $100 million on a campaign to make young Americans aware of the world's geography. The result of this massive effort is that the U.S. has passed Mexico in the rankings this year. The top countries were Sweden, Germany, Italy, France, Japan, and Britain, in that order. In all of these countries, the young people had a better knowledge of geography than Canadians. One bright spot was that 95% of Canadians could find the United States on a world map. Only 89% of Americans could. Nearly a third of the Americans thought that the population of the United States is between 1 and 2 billion people. No wonder they think that the United States of America is the center of the world. So what does this mean to all of us? It means that elections will be won on looks, emotional issues, and pure propaganda. The politicians do not want to discuss the real issues that face us. These issues are boring. Better to flick on the idiot box and watch some sports. If you're looking for something to blame for our dismal collective ignorance, I would hang a great deal of it on television. 10 years ago, a study was done correlating people's knowledge of the facts relating to the Persian Gulf War with the amount of television watched during that war. There was, as suspected, an inverse correlation. The more television people had watched, the less they knew. Those who watched CNN for the most hours were the most likely to think that the war was fought to restore democracy in Kuwait. If you think that the Americans restored democracy to Kuwait, please go down to the Jolly Time Bingo Hall right now and say Uncle Don sent you. The friendly staff there will give you a nice, crisp $100 bill courtesy of the Tooth Fairy. Hurry now. Since September of 2001, there's been a flood of new legislation around the world. We don't know the half of it yet. The consequences of these various obnoxious laws are only being gradually felt. Like a frog in a pot of water being slowly heated, we will not recognize the effects of all this until it may be too late and we are caught in an all-pervasive web of restrictions to our freedom and privacy. Another example of one of the American pieces of legislation has come to my attention. It is entitled the Aviation and Transportation Security Act. The laudatory objective of this act of Congress is to keep those who are a threat to air safety off commercial aircraft. To this end, the act mandates the establishment of a list of those who are, quote, a threat to civil aviation or national security, unquote. According to an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, this list has been established and has been contributed to by the CIA, FBI, INS, that's the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and the State Department. I suppose that this enumeration of contributors is not all-inclusive and that other agencies will also add names. There's a flaw in this concept. It seems that no one agency is responsible for maintaining this list. The growing list floats in cyberspace. It is used by those screening airline passenger lists. Already this list has caused some people who are either legitimate peaceful activists or whose names are similar to those considered dangerous to be ejected from airports and prevented from flying. When these people have tried to appeal their expulsions, they find that there is no mechanism to do this. The investigators for the Chronicle could not find any one of the contributing agencies who knew how to appeal or to remove names. Here we have a monster in its infancy. The list can only grow. Once on the list, even death cannot expunge a name. There are a couple of unintended consequences of this system that will undermine its purported purposes. One or more of the contributors to this list probably rely on anonymous tips as to who is too dangerous to fly. I would certainly not suggest any such thing, but just suppose that miscreants made some creative anonymous contributions to this amorphous list through, say, the FBI. A letter to the Bureau might point out that an executive of a large corporation has terrorist connections. Many such contributions might be made by creative individuals. When enough big shots found themselves subjected to special attention, if not rejection, when they tried to fly, this whole system could be shot down, shall I say, in a hurry. I would never condone anyone sabotaging such a noble exercise in security, but it would be interesting if it happened. Another unintended consequence will be recognized by those among you who have studied pollution. The concept is of dilution as a solution to pollution. Previously, those who are now considered dangerous flew whenever they pleased. They were spread out over thousands of flights, and they were vastly outnumbered by the faceless sheep who infest our airports. They were diluted. Now, as those dangerous radicals and terrorists are forced onto buses and trains, their concentration will increase and the risk of contagion will be raised. A bus from Chicago to New York that was previously filled by tourists, winos, and the poor will now contain a large number of those not allowed to fly. At the very least, this will facilitate the networking of activists on ground transportation, thus allowing their radical ideas to feed and spread. Buses and trains are notoriously hard to bug, so federal spy agencies will not be able to monitor their nefarious plans as they can when hatched by telephone, the internet, snail mail, smoke signals, dead drops, and the like. Just think of the dangers of hotbeds of radicals rolling all over the surface of North America, camouflaged amongst the hoi polloi. I cringe. I have a news scoop on British Columbia's most notorious creep. No, this is not another item about Gordon Campbell. He will get his later. I mean the most notorious non-political creep. Our homicidal pig farmer, Robert Pinkton. It has come to my attention that Picton's brother has a next-door neighbor whose barber bought coffee from a merchant who was an immigrant from Afghanistan. This Afghan was from a small village of Abal al-Sharif, which is the hometown of one of the suicide bombers who took down the second of the World Trade Center towers. See, there's your link to Al-Qaeda. Have you noticed in the news that every violent incident in the last 15 months was perpetrated by someone with, quote, links to Al-Qaeda, unquote? Funny thing, and it all seems to add up to a need to bomb someone or to further circumscribe our rights and freedoms. Speaking of which, a friend sent me a story that ran on the Yahoo News service recently. There's a new Yankee organization calling itself Partnership for Public Warning, which wants to make every American receive immediate warnings of, quote, pending nuclear attack, biological threat, or tornado. How in hell did tornado get into that mix? Well, I suppose this was a sop to the American Red Cross representative on the 30-member group of, quote, security experts who make up the partnership. Something had to be included to get the citizens of Kansas on board. Anyway, the Partners for Public Warning want to get the Homeland Security Department to spearhead the development of technology so that every American could be issued a beeper that would warn of impending disasters. These devices would be produced by private industry, of course, and operated by the government. They can be trusted not to abuse these new toys. Now, I don't want to sound like a paranoid, but do you just suppose that such a device could reveal its location to a satellite? We now know that cell phones, when turned on, are in contact with satellites, and interested parties can tell where the carrier is. Would it not be handy to a snooper agency, such as the Homeland Security folks that are setting up now, to know where each American is at all times? Sounds strange and far out? Check the following. Uncle Sam and Big Brother was the headline. I read on. I remember the notorious American Admiral Poindexter. He and his sidekick, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, ran the shady operation under Ronald Reagan called the Iran-Contra Affair. They sold missiles, that is, weapons of mass destruction in today's terms, to Iran when it was at war with Iraq. At that time, Iraq, under Saddam Hussein, who was then a good guy, was supported by the United States. Poindexter and company, operating from the White House, took the profits from these weapons sales and used them to support the Contra mercenary army that was bravely attacking schools, clinics, and farming cooperatives in Nicaragua. This was around the time that the United States was condemned by the World Court for mining one of Nicaragua's major harbors. For his crimes and lying about them to the Congress of the United States, Admiral Poindexter was convicted of 5 felony counts and sentenced to 6 months in prison. He never served this time due to an immunity deal he finagled. Now this same convicted criminal and liar has been chosen by Bush Light to head a program called Total Information Awareness, about to be signed into existence under Bush's Homeland Security Act. This Total Information Awareness deal will use the most advanced technology to assemble files on hundreds of millions of people and make them available to government paranoids who will try to spot potential terrorists, or whoever they don't like at the moment. They will use advanced search techniques to mine the internet for personal information and emails. They will transcribe phone calls, analyze travel histories, money transactions, check bank accounts, and any other information they can get hold of to build dossiers on individuals. There seems to be no limit to what they can or will do to secretly assemble information. There are no visible restraints on how information will be used. I have no doubt that our own security forces will share information on Canadians to be added to their limitless data banks. George Orwell lives, and 1984 is here. Big Brother is watching you. Now Henry Kissinger is being asked to investigate the facts of the so-called terror attacks of September 2001. With Henry Kissinger joining the other war criminals from previous American regimes, including Colin Powell, Donald Rumsfeld, and the aforementioned Admiral Poindexter, in the American power structure, watch for further bizarre developments. Rumor has it that a big push behind the search for research on Alzheimer's disease is aimed at putting Ronald Reagan back in charge of something. There's also supposedly some frantic work going on to breed a clone of Richard Nixon to head a new Department of Diplomacy and Truth. Back to the future in the USA. Remember that you can write to Uncle Don with your questions, comments, and suggestions. As for enclosures, small unmarked bills only and no white powder. Not funny. Mail will eventually be passed on to me. You would understand better if you saw the filing system at CFUR. Address mailed is to Uncle Don at CFUR Radio, 3333 University Way, Prince George, B.C., V2N4Z9. The human memory is a fragile and fallible thing. Ideally, the human brain should operate like the hard drive on a computer, assembling all of one's life experiences in a linear recording. Our mental search engine should be able to access any portion of the stored memory for total accurate recall. Those of my listeners who are human know that it does not work this way. A better analogy might be the internet, where a search engine might come up with what is desired, or it might yield a whole load of crap complete with ads. Before we criticize the software, take a look at the hardware. The memory storage consists of billions of neurons sending chemical and electrical signals every which way. Considering the five shoddy input mechanisms that we all have to supply the information that builds these memories, it's a wonder that the chunk of meat between our ears can make any sense of the world at all. When I become frustrated at my inability to recall some bit of information, most commonly a person's name, I have to stop and think of the processor I have in my head. It could be worse. One small tumor or a hormone imbalance and the whole thing can go wonky. Worse than the things I cannot remember are the items that I remember incorrectly. One such memory I dredged up while writing a piece for a previous show about my having quit smoking while in the U.S. Army. I distinctly recall that I was smoking 2.5 packs of Kents every day. I know this. I also know that on my monthly payday I bought 5 cartons of those cigarettes in the post exchange and rationed them out to last until the next payday. Another fact. Then I did the math. 5 cartons times 10 packs equals 50 packs, divided by 30 days equals, ouch, just over 1.5 packs a day. My first memory was obviously false. Another false memory came up the other day and it troubles me. I recall that while hitchhiking with a mate in Australia, we were picked up by a friendly man who had multiple handicaps. He had a withered arm and one leg was obviously disfigured. When we asked where he was going, he told us, "Gimpy." That was memorable. It was filed away with those oddities that infest my life. I was moved to check on an atlas recently to check where Gympie is. It is not in New South Wales, as I had recalled. It is in Queensland, which forced me to look at the memory. I am sure that the incident happened, but it could not have been with the guy I thought, as we did not hitchhike in Queensland. It's a false memory reinforced by repetition. How many other things that I think I remember are also false? The Firesign Theater once said, "Everything you know is wrong." Maybe they were not so far off the mark. I've mentioned before that new auto plants are being built in the southern United States. These new plants are gradually replacing the plants in the northern states and Canada as they become obsolete. Besides having a docile anti-union labor force with a mild climate, these states are offering incentives in land, training, utilities, and tax cuts that can add up to hundreds of millions of dollars. Daimler Chrysler has offered an incentive of some $600 million to locate a new plant in a southern state. I don't know whether this is Yankee or Canadian dollars. Figure that high are not finance, they are astronomy. So Canadian branches of these same monstrous, highly profitable corporations are demanding that Ontario, Quebec, and the federal governments match their bribes or they will join the march south. According to a recent article, the smaller companies that supply the giants with parts are also demanding subsidies. It seems that the smaller plants and their jobs naturally follow their customers. Lose one big plant and a dozen smaller ones follow in its wake. We used to have a method of keeping manufacturing industries in Canada. This was called the tariff. If a manufacturer wanted to make a product in a lower cost environment, it had to pay a tariff on that product to bring it into Canada. A product that was much in demand here, like automobiles, could be made here, and the total cost, less the tariff, could be cheaper than importing it from another country. But that was before Brian Mulroney, our traitorous Prime Minister, roped us into the so-called free trade deal that took away our right to impose tariffs. In spite of all the lies we were told about jobs, 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 Mulroney and his henchmen knew they were gutting Canadian industry. That's the reason for the smirk on the portrait of the Mulroney recently hung in Parliament. Already it is being called the Mulroney Lisa. Now the United States is sanctimoniously proposing to eliminate all tariffs on manufactured goods by 2015. This, they claim, will result in a level playing field for all the manufacturers in the world, and everyone will prosper. Aside from the insipid sports analogy, this is another example of bullshit. As long as they can impose punitive special tariffs on goods that they claim hurt American manufacturers, there is no level about that field, and Congress will not give up their right to do this. Also, how can foreigners compete with the massive subsidies that are given to American corporations? These also would remain. And then there are the voluntary quotas that are worked out with overseas suppliers of clothing and such. Voluntary, as in the voluntary tribute of lunch money given to the schoolyard bully. Which brings us to globalization. Those of us who are opposed to globalization are commonly accused of being only negative. We are opposed to progress. We don't want to help poor nations to industrialize. We hear Maggie Thatcher's short argument, TINA, or there is no alternative. Globalization is presented to us as a natural evolutionary product of our marvelous free enterprise economic system. Taint so. Globalization is a human invention. It is no more natural than the ubiquitous SUV. Globalization, as we know it, is a symptom of the victory of transnational corporations over governments. But both governments and corporations are the products of human invention. Both can be controlled by humans. Globalization is the gradual strangulation of the rights of governments to tax and otherwise regulate the actions of business enterprises. The International Monetary Fund and various so-called free trade agreements have set up rules that are beyond the control of our elected governments. We in Canada are finding that we cannot control, for the benefit of our citizens, what goods are imported. A tribunal determined that we could not prevent the importation of a gasoline additive that was a proven health hazard. An international agreement forced on us by Brian Mulroney prevents us from charging more for exported natural gas and oil than we pay for our domestic use of those limited resources. We are tied into that agreement on pain of being brutally punished by the United States if we withdraw. In the event of a crisis in the supply of oil or gas, we're required to keep supplying the U.S. market with the same percentage of production, even if it means that we do not have enough for our domestic needs. In the future, we may find ourselves freezing in the dark, as the Albertans used to say, while the Americans use our oil to run their cars and our gas to heat their swimming pools. That is globalization. We cannot determine what imports we can tax for our own benefit. As I said earlier, if we want to keep subsidized foreign vehicles from competing unfairly with those made here, we cannot do so. We are left with the options of bribing huge corporations to manufacture here or see our factories head south. This is not a case of the much lauded level playing field. It is extortion by the rich. Poor countries cannot protect their farmers from imported grains that are subsidized by rich exporters. These grains from factory farms in the developed countries, including Canada, are dumped on these countries at a price lower than the local farmers' cost of production. As a result, the marginal farmers are driven off the land and into the cities where their desperate families compete for work at starvation wages, producing manufactured goods for those same developed countries. That is globalization. Corporations can now say to their workers that they have to take lower wages or they will move to low-wage countries. We see this happening here almost daily. Without the threat of tariffs on imports, these corporations have the upper hand over labor. The same threats work with governments. After the Second World War, the corporations paid about a half of the total income taxes received by governments in Canada. Now, with the corporations threatening to leave for lower tax jurisdictions, governments are in a bidding war to see who can tax the least. Corporate tax revenues are in the area of 10% of Canada's federal tax income. That's why we have that obnoxious goods and services tax that liar Chrétien refused to abolish as promised. So much potential revenue from corporations has been given up that consumers have to be hit to pay for government, and the corporations go almost completely untaxed. In fact, with all the loopholes and incentives given to businesses, some of the most profitable companies in Canada pay no income tax at all. A few years ago, it was revealed that one of our most profitable banks paid less income tax than any one of its tellers. They are remedying this by disposing of tellers. Simple problem, simple solution, I guess. Here in British Columbia, the Campbell regime is bragging about how low corporate taxes are. They use this as an inducement for corporations to leave other jurisdictions to come here and create jobs, supposedly. This, of course, is part of a bidding war that the corporations enjoy greatly. Here's a positive alternative to globalization as it exists now. Let the international corporations be subject to an international tax that would be uniform across national borders. This would end the shopping by corporations for the country that would tax the least. At this time, great efforts are being made to eliminate the havens for money laundering by terrorists and tax evaders. Let's do the same for those who evade taxes on profits by hiding in tax havens. If we had a powerful international organization for levying taxes, we could also set international standards on things like shipping and fishing. This would take the dangerous single-hulled oil tankers out of commission and prevent tragedies like the one now unfolding off the coast of Spain. International regulation of all fishing could have prevented disasters like the fatal looting of our fish stocks by factory ships that has left our east coast bereft of cod. As it is now, there is no counterbalance to corporations that transcend national boundaries. The United States sees the United Nations as a potential threat to provide a transnational power, and successive American regimes have done their best to keep that organization weak and powerless. It was not just for spite that they refused to pay their dues to the UN for so many years. Yes, there are alternatives to globalization as we are seeing it unfold now. All it takes is international efforts to do so. If the energy that is being spent right now to cobble together an alliance for war were put into such peaceful effort on behalf of humans, we would have international economic justice before the new year is out. But Uncle Don is not to be tarred with the brush of being an optimist. Corporations spread a great deal of money and favors around to those in government who are their pet poodles. We will not see changes, as I propose, in the near future. It would take a revolution in the thinking of most of the world. This will not happen while our heads are buried in the television, professional sports, and the corporate press. Lots of luck, citizens. Well, here it is, Christmas time again. A lot of you here at UNBC and CNC will be flying off to far points for the holidays. Lucky you. I have to stay here and hope for a white Christmas as I celebrate the season of love and greed. Your ticket price will include $24 extra for security. This charge includes GST, if you can believe it. You will be asked to arrive 3 hours early in case there is a delay for security. You will be x-rayed and metal detected for security. If you are swarthy, you may get the rubber glove in the little room for security. Security, security, security. So here we have all of these goofs going through our chattels and documents. We feel secure now, onto the plane and off the runway. Below you is a disgruntled postal employee whose girl ran off with a pilot, so he is at the end of the runway with a heat-seeking missile he bought on eBay. For all the effort wasted on internal security rather than external, we are still vulnerable. By the way, you know where a lot of those shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles came from. The U.S. was giving them to the Mujahideen in Afghanistan by the plane load while they were fighting the Soviets. I guess some of them must have just slipped away in the confusion. Lots of them. George Bush might look at his Bible. As ye sow, so shall ye reap. This is your Uncle Don closing the show for the 4th of December on CFUR Radio, campus-based community radio at 88.7 FM. If you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own. Adios, amigos.